So let's begin by placing both of our feet, the soles of our feet, on Mother Earth and prepare to make the sound of Om together. Let's prepare by taking three conscious breaths. And with the deep in breath. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Last week, we talked about the Tree of Life. We didn't finish. Today, I'd like to finish and start with the review of the first part, which is good. Put it in a new light. The Tree of Life. The Blessed Lord said, the wise speak of an eternal tree of life with its roots above and its branches here in the world. So I guess it might look like that as a metaphor. It was one way yesterday, another today, and it will be different again tomorrow. The metaphor implying that everything we experience in life is changing. We have memories of the way it used to be. If we're present in the present moment and not off in our minds, we experience something now. And we can be pretty sure it's going to be different tomorrow. It buds forth all the sense objects, and its roots reach down to this world, binding people to one action after another. The Tree of Life is a metaphor for everything we experience, what we see, what we hear, what we taste, especially our morning snacks, what we smell. We're not big smellers in this country. Are we? We
have too many allergies.
Yeah, our smell is not as developed as it has been before. Animals use their smell more than we do. And we have a sense of touch. We touch. I touch with my finger, one touch. Touch with other parts of my body, different touch. That's the Tree of Life. Its roots reach down, binding people to one action after another. And that's true. We do one action after another. It's part of this Tree of Life. Okay? Beat your heart one beat. Now beat another beat. Take a breath. Another breath. Those are all actions. So some of the actions we do are conscious and some are unconscious. We're not aware of them unless we focus our attention there. That's the Tree of Life. The true nature of this tree, its form, origin, end, and even its presence, is not perceived at the level of worldly awareness. You just talked about it. And our consciousness, our awareness, is designed to focus on one thing at a time. For the most part, maybe two. Sometimes we're focused on what's going on right now, and sometimes we're focused on mind stories, our minds, aren't we? We're not aware of this tree. And then the scripture says, cut down this deep-rooted tree of life with the sharp sword of non-attachment. cutting down the tree doesn't mean we withdraw our senses and no longer experience life. Rather, through the practice of non-attachment, we're able to step back from our sensory experiences, step back from our repetitive actions, and be in the presence of them. So that our senses and our repetitive actions are something we have and something they do, but they are not who we are. Not who we are. We're not a victim of our circumstances, of things we feel and sense, or even do. We are something else. The practice of non-attachment helps us to experience who we are. Fortunate are those seekers who are no longer deluded by the tree of life and thus are liberated from pride. Pride. I did this. I am breathing. I see that. I hear this. Me, my, I, our I consciousness. Liberated from pride. Because they have conquered personal attachments, they ever abide in their true identity, which is the capitalist self. And we have many names for this capitalist self. We call it the Christ consciousness here in Unity. Perhaps it has to do with the soul. If we can experience that inner presence, then it doesn't need a name, although we'll use a name to talk about it. How beautiful to experience that inner presence and abide in our true identity. And the hint here is we need to liberate ourselves from pride. No longer disturbed by personal desires which have completely abated, or the pairs of opposites such as pleasure and pain, they attain that eternal goal. We're going to continue to have personal desires. We're going to notice opposites, what hurts, what feels good, the pleasure of eating, the pain of being hurt, our bodies getting older. How to not be disturbed by those desires.
So it's not that they don't have desire, but they're not disturbed by them.
How not to be disturbed by them? How to take a step back from our own pain and our own pleasures? And the scripture here says that when we develop that practice, actually they will completely abate. Not that they aren't there, it's just we will be completely free from their influence. We pay attention to them and do what is ours to do, but we're not the victims of them. So we attain that eternal goal. So now we're going to look at some commentary by Satchidananda on this to help clarify. Satchidananda says, what a beautiful sloka. That particular sloka encapsulates pretty much the whole of the yoga teachings in one sloka. Who will reach the eternal goal? Here are the qualifications of liberated from pride and delusion. Delusion. We are so firmly grounded to our lives and what's real, what we see on television as being what's real, and our social media, even our experiences of each other and our experiences of ourselves. To some extent, if we label that a delusion, doesn't mean it's not so or happening for us. But if we label a delusion, we're able to step back a little bit and realize that what we see is bad. Some of us are seeing is good. This is bad. Reverend Russ talked about in church today how he had to go down to the Supreme Court and Capitol in the White House and overcome the attachment that he had perhaps inadvertently developed to what is bad. He had some attachments to what is bad. He knew other people thought his attachments were good, but they were wrong. He was right, they were bad. He had to overcome that life experience, and he did that through a spiritual practice, which he shared with us. In that sense, he began the path of liberating himself from his pride, I'm right, I got it, I'm, this is what's so, and saw it more as a delusion. Delusion, not really real. It's not that it didn't stay real with him, but he was able to step back through his practices. And that's what he shared with us in his sermon. Because pride and delusion are part of the mind. That's what we're talking about, the mind. The mind. You must be free from your body, ego, and mind. You must be free. It doesn't mean you don't have it. It's just you're free and you have it. Free of your body. Free of the pleasures and pains that your body experiences. You have them, but they don't have you. So if a pleasure is taken away from you, well, thank you, God. For example, in church today, if the projector doesn't work and the pleasure of having those slides showing up there is not there, can you be unattached from that and see the universe working perfectly as it is, and this is just what's so for me to deal with today, and recover your center and your joy? Body. You must be free from your ego. That's your I consciousness. We are born with an I consciousness. It's part of our inheritance. Just as all creatures have an I consciousness. When you go to catch a fly, it flies away. It has an I consciousness. It knows being caught is not a good thing for it. Animals have an eye consciousness, and using their eyes and their ears, they strive not to have their eye eaten by some other animal. So there's that constant going on in the universe. The eye and we have the eye consciousness, don't we? We've developed it, perhaps more than the animals we observe, because we have that last part, the mind. We have a mind. We're not sure that other animals have minds. We suspect that some of the animals close to us, chimpanzees, bonobos, and so on, have minds, but not quite the same as ours. Maybe our dogs and pets have minds, too. Certainly they learn, as we do in some ways.
We've got power in our minds. I mean, I think you're talking about not having them own you, but we can really do things with our minds. People who weren't at the first service, the Reverend Russ said after his talking about his trip downtown that we can do anything, right? And right at that moment, the projector comes on with this beautiful picture, and it had been completely blank for the whole part of it. It was just so wonderful. So we do have.
We have minds. And we talked last week what is included in our minds? We bandy the word about mind. What's included in our minds?
But can't we create our own delusion?
We do. I mean, all the time.
Yeah.
We could say that everything in our mind, all our senses, is in some sense a delusion. In that not everyone sees it or experiences it the way we do. So if it's real, why doesn't everyone experience it exactly the same way? That's why we call it a delusion. We recognize that this is our I experience of life. It may not be everyone's. Certainly, there are many aspects of life where we're all in agreement about what is real. And this is the basis for science and the development of science.
I guess being a scientist, though, it's, to me, it's like when you ignore all the science that's going on, even about climate change, that's a delusion. I mean, that's a dangerous delusion. It's going to happen anyhow because that's science. I mean, whether you believe it or not.
Yes. So we have the idea that climate change is real, and others have the idea that climate change is not real. We, or I consciousness, say, well, I'm wrong. And I'm sorry, but I have evidence you're wrong. And yet, the people who we say are wrong, if you can listen to them with some respect and compassion, have reasons which for them are as compelling as our reasons. We don't like their reasons, we think they're bad reasons. And yet, in their experience, they have reasons. Or maybe not, maybe they don't need a reason. So it's just to point out that everyone doesn't agree on the same reality. Now, we do agree on certain things as being real, and it's the basis for all of our science. But even in science, when a new paper comes out, what is in that paper is not accepted if it's based on some experimental evidence, unless, what is it, two or three other independent sources corroborate the experiment. Then it's accepted. But if two or three, whatever the number is, cannot corroborate that same experiment, then it is suspected and not accepted. So we do base what we call reality on a joint communal experience. And yet, in our community, there are some things we experience differently. This is not to put down the practice of science. It's very, very useful, isn't it? And for our spiritual lives, it's important to step back and say, maybe some of those things in my mind, I need to step back from. What are in the mind? Our attitudes. Our attitudes and our opinions. Our feelings. In our mind. And we have just as much control over our feelings as we do our attitudes and opinions. When Russ went downtown, he was carrying with him one emotion, fear. He saw the fear. When he finished his spiritual work, the fear abated and he experienced a different emotion, more of a peacefulness. Attitudes, opinions, emotions, judgments, these are all things in our mind. And Satchitananda is here to tell us if we can gain some perspective on our own minds, we can more often experience who we really are, that capitalist self, that part of us that observes. You must be free. It's the mind that takes pride. It's the mind that becomes deluded. It's the mind that becomes attached to things, who's not attached to our own body. as well as our opinions, as well as our feelings. Aren't we attached to our feelings? I feel sad. You shouldn't feel sad. Wait a minute. I feel sad and I'm going to be sad. I'm sad. Well, you shouldn't. We're attached to things through the mind. Who enjoys pleasures or dislikes pain? Again, the mind. I'm going to skip ahead now. This to a different spot in the talk so we can finish it up. Here we go. Can the knower really be unhappy, or does the knower just know something else is unhappy? Can that part of us that knows really be unhappy, or does the knower just know something else is unhappy? He's giving us a little bit of logic here to help have an experience. He's saying that's how to constantly analyze. We have a knower, and the knower is not the part of us which he calls the mind, which is happy or unhappy, experiences this or that. Keep asking yourself, am I doing this? If you lift a log, ask, am I lifting the log? No. My mind wants it lifted, and my hands are helping. The real one is just watching. There are spiritual practices where you can do things, karma yoga, and observe yourself doing those things. We did an exercise in class last week where we did that, remember? A little exercise, we visualize something, and then as part of that exercise, we step back and watched ourselves doing the exercise. So it's like the mind. The mind wants something done, and the mind notices that the body follows along. And the capitalist self watches. My mind has a desire to do this. It directed the body here and said to the hands, come on, lift the log, put it there. And the body is obeying the mind. It's true, literally, you are the eternal witness. Can we get in touch with that eternal witness? That's the spiritual practice. Not to let go of anything of who we are. No, this is to do what Rev Russ did when he went downtown. It's the same for any person who has achieved enlightenment. They do the same things as everyone else does, but with a different consciousness. Not we'll do things differently. Have a different consciousness. Different consciousness of peace. While we're even happy, showing happiness, being sad, but having a deeper consciousness of peace that's watching all that going on, watching our emotions even. And you step back from your own anger or fear. Notice that you're having that emotion. Can you do it? You are the eternal witness. The recommendation to do this is so that we can live a life grounded in peace. May still have all the stuff that other people have, but somehow inside we're witnessing that as well as having it, and this allows us not to be so attached to it and to always be in touch with our peace. I'm angry. I'm not attached to it. It's not who I am. I can see myself being angry. This is a spiritual practice.
I was just wondering about that, just before you started talking about that. It's like, if I'm angry about something, and then I try to like transform it, and not be angry through like
a spiritual practice.
Yes.
Like, which is real? Are they both real? Is it like quantum physics where
which is
multiple
really
things can happen at once?
Which is really trying to transform. Actually, in my experience, if you go to a true spiritual teacher or a psychologist and you say, I am angry. They're not going to try and transform that anger. The first job for you to do is to truly experience that anger. In our society, we're often taught to suppress our anger. We're aware of some people that don't suppress their anger. Just let it all hang out. We may or may not approve of those people who are just letting it hang out. Have any of you watched the movie A Streetcar Named Desire? It was on the television last night, and I watched part of it. Stanley Kowalski. When he got angry, he broke things and he threw things. He fully experienced his anger. Fully experienced it, wanted to kill him. And he hit his wife, and the wife went upstairs, and he got all that anger out of him, finished with it. And what did he do after he finished with his anger? Famous scene from A Streetcar Named Desire. He's out in the courtyard, his wife is upstairs, and he puts his hands, he got it, place, and he says, "Hey, Stella!" He wanted his wife back, he wanted to be forgiven. And then what happened? She came down the stairs. Her sister, Blanche, the nutty one, said, don't, he's an animal, no, stay here. She didn't. She went down the stairs, forgave him, they embraced him. Went inside. Fully experienced that. But we often suppress our anger. So spiritual teachers and psychologists will encourage us to fully experience our anger and yet do it in a safe space so that we don't harm anyone else. Now, Kowalski didn't give a damn. He harmed whoever was around him. He hit him, he threw punches, he threw things. The spiritual teacher recommended, no, find a safe space. Completely experience the anger. And when you do that and completely experience it, a very natural and magical thing happens. You automatically and naturally transcend without having to do a darn thing. It may be that your anger requires more work than that one safe space for your experience. You may have to spend weeks experiencing. I had to do that when I got divorced. I was angry. It took me weeks of early morning walks where I'd go out and walk, and I let my anger come forth. If anybody saw me, they'd think I was off my rockers, bearing my fists. I was angry. At some point, the anger did abate. It just became quiet, which was the basis for me going beyond. And I didn't have to do anything except fully express the anger. Make sense?
Thanks.
So we don't transcend it. God is in charge of that. Our job is to fully experience what's true for us. Yes.
Well, and then just a little thing in your mind is reminding you not to get attached to it, because it can become who we are if we grab onto it.
Through our spiritual practices, as you point out, we can learn that anger is something we have and we don't want it to have us, which doesn't mean we don't allow it to be fully expressed. It just means while we're expressing it, some part of it is noticing, this is not who I am. It's just my anger. God gave it to me. And I'm not going to go against the will of the universe or God and suppress it and hold it in. I'm going to let it out. But I don't want to harm anyone in the process. Part of our spiritual practices is allowing ourselves to do what is ours to do and not suppressing it, which applies to many, many things. So that is our eternal goal. It's not that you are literally going to arrive at that state someday. You're already there, but somehow you don't seem to recognize it. We can suppress it. You're already there. You seem to have forgotten your real nature. You have slipped into a kind of sleep. Satchitananda says. You assume all these qualities. Here we go. I'm rich. I'm poor. We know people, we hear about it with lots of money, that say, oh, I need more. Still poor. Vulnerable. And we also have seen people, perhaps on television, who say, I'm rich. We look around and say, well, they look poor to me. If you're rich, you assume these qualities. I'm full. I'm hungry. I'm happy. I'm unhappy. I'm a miserable person. Reminds me of another scene from a television show I like, Doc Martin, where Doc Martin explained to someone who was undergoing cancer treatment how, as a child, his parents didn't love him and they wanted to get rid of him and send him away. And the guy experiencing cancer says, you miserable son of a bitch. Well, Doc Martin has his own way of coping with unhappiness. He bullies everyone else around. That's why we say, wake up, wake up. Not that you don't have these qualities, but you wake up from them having you. Got it? You wake up from them having you. You're the boss. They're not the boss. Whatever you do, keep this in mind. Constantly think, who is doing this? Who is eating now? Who is hungry? Who knows who is hungry? And who is enjoying the taste of food? This is an exercise to liberate us from the I consciousness. I. You. Liberties. Who's doing this? Well, my mind is doing it, and my muscles and bodies are cooperating. Who's eating them? Oh, my hand, my tongue, I'm chewing, I'm salivating. I'm having an emotion of happiness, tastes good. Who is hungry? Mind is hungry. You're not hungry. It's a sense. Mind is hungry. Who's enjoying the taste of the food? Well, the tongue is and sends a message to the mind. Hey, this is great. You're not enjoying the food. Your tongue is and sends a message to the mind. The mind is so happy. Nice church snacks. Am I doing it, or is it my mind or body? Having this perspective that your mind and body are doing things, not helps to liberate you from the tyranny of this I, you consciousness. If you keep on questioning, even in the midst of heavy work, you separate your identification from the body and mind. I am not my body. I am not my mind. I have a body. I have my body. I have a mind. I'm blessed with a great mind. It thinks all kinds of helpful thoughts. And sometimes it gets in the way and thinks thoughts that bother me. But in general, it's a great mind. Thank you, God. It's not who I am. That separation is your liberation, your freedom from suffering. As the Buddha pointed out, people suffer. the various paths in Buddhism are how to free oneself from suffering and be liberated. In yoga, which is similar to Buddhism, there are other spiritual paths. And here's some techniques for separating your identification with the body and mind. That separation is liberation. You have liberated yourself from the body-mind clutches, and you remember your true nature. True nature. Then you become the master because you're able to see your mind and body as separate things. Now, in a sense, they're not. We're one whole, aren't we? But if we can see them as separate things, then eventually we might experience ourselves as whole on that path to get there. We can see the mind and body as separate things and slowly get a grip on them. Not that we are able to transcend fear necessarily, but getting a grip on them is knowing, aha, what am I in charge of, and what's the universe or God in charge of? I'm in charge of fully experiencing who I am. And the universe and God is in charge of the fruit of my actions. We are told not to be attached to the fruit of our actions. So if you try and experience whatever, anger, get a bit, no. The Bhagavad Gita says you have a right to your actions,
but not to your actions.
To the fruits of your actions.
Yeah.
God is in charge of that. Act for the action's sake. And do not be attached to inaction. Or you say, oh, I can't do anything. Self-possessed. That's the capital S. Self-possessed. Resolute. Act. With no thought of results. Open to success or failure. Open. God's in charge. Not me. Open to success or failure. This equanimity is yoga, is liberation. Mm-hmm. Get a grip on it. You can say, now do this, do that. Sometimes you can say, I don't want you to do anything. Keep quiet. I'm going to rest. Mm-hmm. You may have difficulty with that. You can give it a shot. And the mind becomes silent. Through our spiritual practices, through meditation, we may experience, to some extent, that unquieting. Or we may just experience our mind being mostly out of control. And we can practice quieting the mind. And can become silent. That's liberation. When you are really free from identifying with your own body, mind, and egoism, the I-self, you are always happy. Now, happiness is a different state from, oh, I'm so excited. That's not happiness. Or, oh, I'm so upset. Oh, that's not happiness. Happiness is the place of equanimity. You're always happy. You are an eternal witness. My experience of Satchitananda was he was always happy. He was a man who did many things. He had many responsibilities. He led a large organization. He had successes and failures, huge failures and huge successes. And yet he seemed just always happy and available to whomever was around him. You just see and enjoy everything. And what are the things you enjoy? Sometimes the mind functions as a hero. All right, enjoy the hero act. Sometimes it's a villain. Well, enjoy the villainy, he says. Enjoy the mind. I see you really play the part beautifully. All right, go on. But you are not affected by it. The capital self-partitive. The mind is great, it's a hero. People tell you you're wonderful. People say you're a villain. You enjoy the mind. You enjoy the mind, but you're not affected by it. Yes, maybe you have some emotional responses. Those are built into your nature. Get upset, whatever. But somehow, can you be upset and still not be affected by your upset? Have some part of you that's always in touch with your true self, your equanimity. So that even when you're upset, you can look and say, gosh, I'm upset. But you know this will pass. Takes you back to your true self. This will pass. So, in a sense, you enjoy the mind being upset. Mind's upset, oh well, go ahead, you're upset. There's nothing I can do about it because you seem to have a mind of your own, but a part of you observes it, and a part of you is not affected by it.
So the idea is to increase the self-awareness of the mind, is that it?
Yes, to create the awareness, I have a mind, I am not the mind. The mind is so strong and such a big influence on me that sometimes it takes over and the mind gets upset and I feel like I'm upset. Someone says, Sam, what's going on? You say, I'm upset.
Right.
Now, if you told them the truth is, they say, Sam, what's wrong? You're so upset. You could say, well, Steve, actually my mind is upset. I'm not upset. It's my mind is upset. Now, if you said that to someone, they'd think you're really off your rocker.
Really upset.
So, someone
says, yeah, my
says,
mind is happy.
Sam, you're upset. You say, I am upset. But then you translate it inside. Say, oh, my mind is upset, not me. And Satchitananda is going to address that here before we close. Most people don't see the separation. Still see the body and mind functioning and say, you are doing this and that. It doesn't matter, let them think so, because they can't see the separation. To others, oh, no, bye. Yeah, go ahead, go to the service. We're going to finish up. Thank you for joining us. To others, it may appear that you are doing things, but really, you are not. Others can't see the separation. The real you isn't doing anything, only the reflected you is. And this is sometimes called action in inaction. You may have heard that before. Action in inaction. You are acting, but part of you is not. Part of you is observing. The real you isn't doing anything. It's inactive. Only the reflected you is acting. You are active, but at the same time, inactive. You know that the real you is inactive, but others see you as active. The real you is just there, always happy. Even though the reflected you may be experiencing some unhappiness. They might even praise you, but you will just laugh at them. You have the freedom from all your bondage. You are just you. That's the goal of dream. You're just you. That's the goal of dream. Any questions or comments before we close?
Like the real you, that just has no responsibilities except just to be.
Ah, the real you is responsible for acting as spirit guides one to act, yes, and observing the body and mind and performing what is yours to do. So you always know, if you look, what is yours to do. Don't be attached to inaction. You always know what is yours to do. Act for the action's sake. And a part of you is noticing, I'm acting for the action's sake. I'm not trying to force things. I'm not trying to force things. I'm not trying to transcend my anger. Rather, I'm doing what is mine to do. And what's mine to do? Well, maybe it's to experience my anger.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to influence your mind and your body. You're just not going to do it.
You're always doing things. You're always acting. But there is a part of us that doesn't act, that self-observed part. That's not doing the acting. It's the other parts of us that are doing the acting. We need to recognize that both are valid. The part that's inactive, not doing anything, looking around, happy. And the part that experiences emotions, happy, unhappy, doing, not doing. And through this recognition and discernment, can we allow ourselves to act for the action's sake and do what is ours to do? And not let the mind, especially the I sense, control us. Not respond to the I sense. Rather to the God sense, what is mine to do?
Okay, thank you.
I'm also wondering if the capital S self, the God sense, can observe the feeling body and still be detached.
Of course it observes the feeling body.
Right.
The scriptures tell us it's not attached to them because it was around before we had a body and a mind. It's going to be around after we have a body and mind. So the mind is attached to things. That's the nature of the mind.
It's
one of the attributes of the mind is to be attached to things. One of the attributes of that capital S self is not to be attached to things. Can we get in touch with that?
That's interesting. So can the observer actually observe the feeling and emote the feeling, like sadness, fear?
Sure, why not?
Anger. Interesting. That's a very interesting thought process.
Through our minds?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We start off in our spiritual work feeling one, unity. Then we have to learn to separate things to see the real truth. So we have to learn to discern. I have a capital S self that has certain qualities that's different from my I sense and my mind and my body. And once we get fully understanding those differences, and we're fully in place with it, and we're able to experience our equanimity, our happiness all the time, no matter what emotions the mind's going through, or what the eye sense is grasping onto. Once we get there, then eventually the sense of oneness will return with a different consciousness. It's like we have to climb that ladder to get to a certain place, or climb the ladder. When we do get to that place, we don't need the ladder anymore. We can let it go. Right now, we're climbing the ladder of discernment. And for some reason, we all need to hear the same thing again and again and again and again and again. And sometimes a little more fix, and sometimes a little less fix. We go up, back, forth. We are drawn to this sort of discernment. It has a ring of truth and validity about it, which draws us to it, even though we may not get it totally. So we keep coming back, keep rereading the scriptures and the words of enlightened people to assist us as they themselves were assisted by their spiritual guides in their process towards enlightenment. They're paying it forward. Maybe one day we can pay it forward as well.
You do.
Yeah, we're experiencing that in this room.
Mm-hmm.
It's called to observe the observer self, the God self.
Thank you.
Yeah, that just came to me today, God self. I think that's another good way to describe that capital self, the God self within us.
Thank you.
Shall we close with our Om? Three conscious breaths. And a deep in breath.
Peace. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.